This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You've seen them on social media, someone proudly declaring they've got the body of a 30-year-old, even though they're, say, 47, thanks to a biological age test. And these tests promise to peek into how fast or well your body is aging at the cellular level, but how much science is behind the hype, and do the results actually mean anything for your health? Well, to help us separate the fact from the fluff, we're joined by Associate Professor Hassan Valley, an epidemiologist at Deakin University. Hassan, welcome back to Drive.
Hi, Warren.
We've all got a birth date, but what does it mean when someone says their biological age is different to their actual age?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting one, and it does confuse a few people. But basically, it's measuring the wear and tear on your body as opposed to how many laps you've done around the sun. And you know, we all know that people age at different rates and people look after themselves, you know, with different levels of dedication, and that reflects in how well your body actually ages. And so I guess the attraction of these biological age tests is that they can give people, or they promise to give people, a bit of an insight into how their bodies are actually doing.
What do they measure, Hassan?
Yeah, look, it's really interesting. So these tests, and specifically the ones that I sort of looked more closely at in my article and the conversation, they're called epigenetic clocks, and they measure the methylation of your DNA. And to be more specific, they look at how much your DNA is methylated and where on which sites on your DNA the methylation sits. And then they use this to estimate your biological age. And, you know, just to understand this a little clearer, when we're talking about methylation of DNA, we're talking about these chemical tags that attach to your DNA, and they play a role in gene regulation. So they're like on-off switches that determine which genes are expressed and which ones aren't. And it's one of those interesting kind of happy accidents that quite often happens in science. Somewhere around just after the year 2000 or in the early 2000s, it was sort of serendipitously observed that these methylation patterns correlated really well with people's biological age.
Can you control the methylation yourself through other means? Can we, so let's say we do one of these tests and it says our age is 20 years, our biological age is 20 years older than, say, our actual chronological age. Can we then go and make modifications to change the methylation of the DNA?
Yeah, look, it's a really, really interesting question that you ask, and I've got to try not to trip myself in trying to answer, because you've actually hit on a couple of the key issues. So firstly, this methylation pattern is just a correlation. Now, it correlates really well, but we don't know what it means. Mm. So that, I guess that's the first distinction to make. But the second sort of issue that you've raised is that if these methylation patterns do actually, for whatever reason, and we don't understand the biology, they do relate to your biological age. You're not trying to change your methylation patterns. That will happen anyway. What you're trying to do is do all the right things so that, you know, your body is healthier and so that you're younger, in inverted commas. And so, you know, those things, these tests can't tell you what you should and shouldn't do. It's the rest of the body of science that tells us what's healthy. So we know we should be eating well and we should be exercising regularly and all those things I'm always going on about. So regardless of what this test may tell you in terms of good news or bad news, the advice is always the same. Just eat well and don't smoke and exercise and all those things.
They're not cheap though. Let's say it's around $500 in some cases. I suppose from a public health perspective, is there much better value in spending that kind of money on something else, perhaps just being healthy, as opposed to finding out something that we really don't have any control over, do we, in terms of the result?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that is the key question here. And so I would say that if you have unlimited pots of money, and I certainly don't, it's a kind of fun thing to do. And especially if you can take repeat measurements over time to really get a more robust understanding of how your body's doing, I would say, well, you know, I would probably do it in that situation. If I don't have, you know, I'm not a tech billionaire and have lots of money, I would probably say, yeah, look, there's $500 I can spend on a gym membership or eating healthier for the next month or a number of other things. So it is it's a really tricky one. It depends on your personal situation. But the sort of question that underlies the question you're asking is, does it give you any actionable information? So it may give you this really nice number and you may be able to post it on social media and tell people how well you're doing. But at the end of the day, if you get a good result or a bad result, these tests can't say, oh, you're tracking really badly because we can see that you're not sleeping well and you need to do something about that. It can't give you that sort of information. And so, you know, people have got to ask the question whether they want to spend $500 and not get any useful diagnostic information.
Hassan, I think my concern would be if it came back with a bad number, it could potentially raise anxiety and stress levels, which could actually make that number worse.
Absolutely. And I think this is the other risk, especially when you don't have, it doesn't give you further insight as to what is going on. So if you get a bad number, firstly, you've got to remember that this isn't actually your biological age. It's a proxy for your biological age and it's not measuring everything to do with your body and it's certainly not predicting how long you will live. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing you've got to understand is that, you know, as I say, we've just got to keep doing the best we can in terms of what the science tells us to live healthier and longer lives. And that damage that or that sort of bad result that you may have gotten, you could have incurred that damage to your body, you know, in your 20s when you smoked and took lots of drugs and drank lots of alcohol, and you might be doing okay now. And so you need really good assistance to interpret the results that you get. And if you don't get that and you get a bad result, the situation that you've just mentioned can occur, and that's terrible.
We're chatting with Associate Professor Hassan Valley from Deakin University about the rise of biological age tests, those DNA-based tools that promise to tell you how old your body really is. Hassan, there's no standard method, is there, across companies, though, for calculating biological age. How much of a problem is that, though, for consumers?
Oh, it's a huge problem. So these tests are really good in that they do a reasonable job of measuring biological age, and they're very good in a research context. And when you're studying populations and looking at population averages. But the limitation is when you've got a test that's offered direct to the consumer, you need some sort of regulatory control and standardization. Everyone needs to be confident in terms of what's being measured. And that's what's lacking at the moment. So different companies are offering different tests that all come under the banner of biological age testing, but the laboratory methods are very different. And even these epigenetic clocks, they've been around for about 10 or so years, but the science has moved forward in leaps and bounds. And so there are different generations of tests. So the original was the first generation. I think we're up to the third generation of tests now that perform quite a bit better. But different companies are offering different versions of that test, and there is no transparency around that, and that's a bit of a problem.
The big question, Hassan, what's the more proven and affordable way for someone to get a real sense of how their health is tracking over time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I need to think about that. I mean, I think How do you do that? I don't think there is one perfect way. I think you need to collect. So some of the tests that your doctor will do, they're pretty good. Like when they do their general blood screens and look for inflammation and, you know, even look at cholesterol, they kind of give you a nice indication of how your health is going, and they can predict your likelihood of getting diseases. So, you know, you have simple measures like that, and then you have these more sophisticated measures, and I don't think any of them are perfect, and any of them represent the complexity, the full complexity of the human body. But depending on, you know, how much money you're willing to spend, and as long as you understand the limitations, there's nothing wrong with doing these sophisticated tests. But equally, you know, it's the reason we're supposed to see our GP every year and have a checkup so they can keep an eye on how our health's tracking.
I guess I don't see the point in doing them. I think if I can make a decision in my life or my behaviour that is good for my health, I should be doing that anyway, rather than needing to spend money to get a test that could tell me that either I don't need to do it or I do need to do it. I think that's something that we should, if we've got the opportunity to do, make these changes, then we should be doing them anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's where we are right now. And without teasing your audience, I think the next iteration of these tests, and this is where people are sort of aspiring to get to, is to actually have a test like this that can give you some actionable information. So if a test like this was able to say the biggest problem in your life is your lack of sleep, and, you know, you should focus your energy on that, and, you know, then you'll live longer, then these tests become useful. And that sort of comes into the area of precision and personalized medicine. So, you know, there is a point where these tests may be incredibly useful and worth the expense for the average person, but we're probably not there yet.
Hassan, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us.
Nice talking to you, Warren.
Thank you, Associate Professor Hassan Valley, epidemiologist at Deakin University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.